Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Gail St. John will join us to give us an insider's view into the mysterious world of psychic investigation. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-host, Maureen. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fantastic, Stephen. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to your show.
Well, that is certainly fantastic. I'm looking forward to it as well. I mean, I've always been a big true crime buff. And, you know, to me, psychic power and criminology are just the most natural partners in the whole world. Tonight, we're going to have a great show. But before we bring out Gail St. John later on, why don't you share with us what you're...
What I do.
Absolutely. You read my mind.
I read your mind because that's what I do. And I do dishes. I vacuum. And I do a mean cappuccino. I'm an empath. I'm an empath psychic consultant, intuitive. Well, you know those labels. But I do feel tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. I utilize that as my main tool. I don't need them. But I'm connected with them. And I'm self-taught. And I love my work, especially helping others do their work, inner work.
Absolutely. Well, I watch you do it every single week, Maureen, and I got to say you're marvelous. You're amazing. I encourage everybody out there to go to PsychicAccess.com and find Maureen. Well, we also have with us Dr. Nona Marie. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Stephen. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. I can't wait to hear your show.
I can't either. I'm excited about this guest. I've spoken with her personally. She's very engaging, full of energy, and she's going to have a lot of really, really interesting stories for us tonight. But you know what? She's coming out here in a few minutes, but before she does, why don't you tell us some of what you do at PsychicAccess.com?
Oh, I raise the dead? Oh, no.
Awesome. Well, you do something very similar. You certainly communicate.
Well, I do. I talk to those who have crossed over, and I do a lot of predictive readings as well. But I like to do them within the context of learning the trail in front of you so you can better navigate it. So it's not so much just magic looking at the future, but looking at how to navigate the trail. And I'm actually going with a friend this weekend to talk to some what she calls earthbounds, commonly referred to as ghosts, who are haunting a house so we can help them to cross over and stop having a party here on Earth and scaring people. So
that's
fun work.
Well, color me fascinated. I hope you get to hear some more about that in the future. But for sure, everybody listening out there, find Dr. Nona Marie at PsychicAccess.com. Well, in a few minutes, we're going to have Gail St. John come out. And one of the more interesting thing about Gail is how she spells her name, G-A-L-E, like a hurricane, like a force. And that is certainly what this lady is like. I like to say that her psychic powers help her to find needles in haystacks, y'all. But I got to tell you, really, we have more than one haystack involved here. What she does is she locates which haystack out of dozens, hundreds, thousands, and then she finds the needle. And she does not do it alone. Her faithful canine companions are invaluable once she gets them pointed in the right direction. This is the special thing about Gail St. John. She doesn't simply possess psychic powers in spades, which she does, but she also possesses credentials to handle search dogs effectively. And in fact, she's part of an Indiana search team that actually looks for various, for example, bodies or accident victims, what have you. And she is also certified as a volunteer canine handler, and is quite interesting. She will certainly share some of her stories with us tonight. Her dogs are nationally credentialed animals, so they are, in effect, quite expert themselves in locating lost things, locating hidden things, things that have disappeared, things that obviously are valuable and need to come home. So tonight, once we get Gail on, she'll explain to us for her various travels across the globe and how on earth she does this amazing thing. Because I got to tell you, folks, most psychic detectives, what they do is they call the police and ask to be involved in the investigation. Let me help. Let me help. Gail St. John actually goes to find the body first, and then she calls the police to come and conduct their investigation. She has a website, obviously. You can find her at psychicgailst.john.com. And as I've mentioned, she spells her name as G-A-L-E and not G-A-I-L. So she's Gail St. John. Very, very interesting lady. And she also is an author of many books. Well, one in particular that is quite interesting. We'll be talking about that tonight. That book actually details a lot of her stories as well. So if you're interested in all things criminological, if you're interested in mysteries, for example, then tonight should be a pretty good show. And we are definitely working on getting her out here now. And again, Gail St. John. Hello, Gail. Are you with us yet? We're trying to establish.
I am.
Ah, hi. I suppose you heard some of my introduction then.
I did. I got a chance to listen to it. It always sounds a little strange to me.
Well, we're definitely very happy to have you here tonight. Let's go ahead and get started. So would you mind describing your procedure a little bit? Like, for example, how do you get started on a case? Are you called out, or do you get an urge, or how does it happen? How does it begin?
Well, you know, it can be all of the above. I mean, really, it can. There are some where it was just so strong. It was like one of those things where you can't resist. It's like dangling the candy in front of the kid. Yeah. Those are the ones you just go, I got to go. You know,
so sort of like,
I already know where, so let's just get this over with.
Yeah.
And then there's ones where, you know, and I would say most of the time, police or, state attorneys are calling me. And I go and, work on the cases. I have some families that'll call, but when families call, I have to follow procedures and protocol, which if I agree to work with the family, it doesn't really mean that it's okay. So I have to have the family kind of be the go-between and get a hold of the police, the detective that's working on their missing person's case, and say, are you okay? This is who she is. This is what she does. But she's, she's credentialed in search work. The dogs are credentialed. And, we're at a standstill with our missing loved ones. Can we please get an okay from you? So I just can't butt in. I can't just jump in.
Right.
You like to, but listen, I have protocol. It has to be followed.
Well, you've not done this just in America. You've also been called outside the country to help with missing people as well. So you've obviously done this for several decades, and you've had many interesting cases in many interesting places. And I know it's going to be difficult what I'm going to ask you to do here, but essentially I'm curious if you can narrow down a couple of the more memorable cases that you've investigated and handled.
Yeah, I've worked over 1,000, well over 1,000 cases. But there's a few that stand out in my mind. And I got to say, one case was in Japan. And I found it so interesting. You have several issues going on, one with language barrier, as well as culture barriers. Okay? So there's certain things you have to be very careful with when you speak of them. in our country, to be honest, most people heard, and I'm not saying we're it's not about caring about it, but if you said the word someone was raped or a child was molested, we're a very open country. Mm-hmm. And we don't have issues with saying, listen, we need to take care of this problem. It's different. It's different there in Japan. Those are things that are never put on the news, never put out, never talked about.
So you have to be very tactful.
As that sounds, very, very, very hush.
Sure. I would imagine.
I think most people would go, what? Really? It's true. It's very true.
So you've traveled to Japan to hunt for the missing as well. Any other interesting?
I've been to Japan 3 times hunting for different people. They've actually paid for me to go there and find them. So it's, like I said, the cultural differences. You do begin to understand the language barrier. It's really not a barrier.
Did you find the police to be hostile over there or trying to block your work?
Not really. Surprisingly, not really. They had given up and were open to anything at this point, and the mother of the one missing girl was open to it. Her name was, I can mention it, just I'll give the first name. Her name was Yayoi. And so she asked me to, you know, help, and then, of course, the Asahi TV got involved and went to the police and said, can we, you know, bring her here? And so I ended up in Japan, and like I said, there was a lot of language barriers. But I found that, you know, on the other side, you know, it's not a problem, because if they say something to me, I can get the gist of it by listening to my guides. And I ended up with an interpreter later, but I'd always answer the question of the, you know, people, you know, talking to me before the interpreter said what they said. She goes, why do you keep doing that? I said, well, was my answer correct? She goes, well, yes. I went, okay, well, all right. You're here in case I don't get it.
Right. It seems like a translator would be unnecessary when you're dealing with the spirit world and, you know, where things might be a little multilingual over there. But how did that case resolve?
I found, in that case, with Yayoi, I did locate her. So, you know, it was sad. I did find her deceased.
You did find. Now, this was a very cold case. As you said, the Japanese authorities had given up on this.
Right. So, you know, it was sad. And it was hard to see the mother.
Sure.
So sad. And I hugged her. And we both cried. And cried. And, you know, it doesn't have to be someone I know. You know, the feelings are there, and if you're any bit of a, you don't even have to be psychic or sensitive in any way to feel that pain of someone else's, that loss.
Well,
you know, so it's about compassion, and you really do have to have a lot of compassion to do this. And there's times when it just really hurts.
May I ask, what sort of, do you establish some sort of a relationship with the deceased or with the missing person? Is this possible? Or is that sort of brokered by your spirit guides? Are they the ones directing you?
You know, it's both ways. I mean, to be honest with you, it's both ways. Sometimes I'll hear more from guides repeating things to me, and sometimes I have the victim come direct. And to be honest with you, I like when the victim comes direct, because they're very adamant about where they are, what's happened to them, and it goes so smoothly.
Do you think there's a relationship between the manner in which the victim went missing and died and the enthusiasm that their spirit has? For example, if someone runs away and they encounter a bad fortune, is it possible that maybe their spirit is still wanting to stay hidden someplace, or perhaps is, in other words, I guess I'm asking if there could be some, if you have any, I guess an educated guess as to why certain spirits are more vocal and why others, you know, seem to be more shy.
I think so. I mean, I really, in one case I had that really stands out was a case in Arizona. and this is where, when I was doing the Larry King show years ago, he said that, you know, I was the first one to actually save a life. Well, it wasn't hard to save a life from, you know, somebody else being killed, because this girl's roommate, they were best friends, loved each other dearly, like sisters. She was so clear to me and so full of energy, it wasn't hard to figure out that the roommate was the next victim.
Oh my goodness, she made it extremely clear.
I made it extremely clear to the police detective working the case. He was able to prevent her from going out on a date. She was going out on a date the next day with this guy.
My goodness gracious, that is kind of chilling, if you ask me. It seems to me as if there's been a long history of the police at least being friendly to psychics. You know, it's almost as if they're very open-minded. I wanted to ask you, what's your relationship usually like with other emergency workers?
You know, it goes. You do get your kind of hostile ones at times that don't want you there. But generally, if I'm called out, it's a welcome thing. I mean, they're happy. And some may be skeptic. I do have some walk right up to me and go, listen, I'm 100% skeptical. And generally, my answer back to them is, I am too.
That's
so
excellent.
When I find them, then I'm going to believe myself.
I think that's a great attitude.
It's not 100% science, so I'm skeptical too. I'm hearing all these things. I'm following what I'm told.
So this actually raises another question for me. I'm very curious about what sort of sensory apparatus guides you. Is this an olfactory thing? Do you pick up smells, or is it purely visual or auditory? Can you describe the sensory
field? I'm laughing because it's like all of them, but every case is different. But I will say, when you say pick up smells, it's not a real smell, okay? I mean, if I'm smelling somebody that's 10 miles from me, it's I might be picking up a perfume they wore. And it may lead me closer to them. I also use people's electrical force that we all have. It's like our DNA. I always tell people that's your thumbprint DNA, because that electrical force that you leave behind, because we are electric, is like a cell phone wave going through the air. Okay, you can't see your cell phone wave. You can't see all these waves going through the air. And some people can't feel it. But you can pick up people the same way that a cell phone is picking up another cell phone or another, you know, phone.
Sure.
You can feel that. And once you can find that particular vibration, just like a bloodhound would find that particular person's scent on the ground, I will search for that person's particular signature electrical force, and I will keep following it. And if I lose the trail, and I do, I'll move a little bit more to the left, to the right, and seeing what street did they go down, where did they go, and then keep following.
And for everybody listening, I just want to emphasize again, you can visit Gail St. John at her website, Psychic Gail St. John. You can pick up her book there, Missing and Presumed Dead. I mean, if you like, for example, Investigation Discovery Channel, then you're going to love to read this book, I tell you. So anyway, moving on, Gail, I wanted to mention your book so that people would know that you have that out there in case they are hungry for more after this show, which I guarantee that they will be. I mean, if you're into this sort of stuff, then it's just highly fascinating. Well, one thing I definitely want to ask you is, you know, do you ever pick up any details on offenders? You talked some about, you know, helping that one girl's roommate avoid almost a certain tragedy there, but do you ever pick up any other detail about offenders, for example? I'm curious about that. Or is it purely victim-driven?
And on that particular case where the roommate, her life was saved, that particular guy, they told me they had picked up the right guy. And I said, no, you haven't. you do not have this guy. He works at, and I named a place, and the police ended up going there and questioning him. But I said, when you're questioning him, I said, this guy is going to try to hurt you, and he's going to be very calm, cool, collected. You're never going to expect this. And the detective said, really? I mean, you know, that was that kind of really kind of sound, you know?
Yeah, not taking it seriously? Or
I was like, well, just heed this warning.
Yeah.
Because I'm really picking up on this vibration, and he goes, we don't even know if we have the right. You're telling us this guy works, you know, at this place. He goes, And so the roommate is saying that's the guy she was going to go on a date with. He goes, well, we don't have any proof. I went, just be careful. And right. I said, he's actually going to admit to what he did. He did admit that he was going to kill a roommate. He did admit to killing her friend. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, without warning, he swung a punch at the detective and put his fist right through the wall.
Oh, okay. And so I'm sure you made a believer out of that detective.
Oh, he called me up and said, it was sort of like the person you joke about who saw a ghost. He was like, wow. Oh, I just got to tell you what happened. I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, you know, certain people, when they're confronted of proof of stuff like this, it can unhinge them. Have you ever had any sort of response like that from, you know, an uber rational or very materialistic sort of police officer, or, you know, someone who just can't believe that, you know, you ever?
Oh,
ever
absolutely. Did? Yeah, oh, wow. Absolutely. That was a case I actually worked in Ohio, and I was actually standing in front of the body, so I had to make the call. And he got there, and he was, like, totally in disbelief. And then he got upset and turned it around and said, I'm going to have to take you in because you might be
suspect.
The killer.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I was wondering
about
that.
I mean, talk about coming unhinged. That's coming unhinged. I didn't even know the guy.
Yeah, also, I have to put myself in the police's perspective, and, you know, they obviously can't take a case to court and cite you as evidence because, you know, the defense attorney would just probably, you know, have a field day with that. So does that factor into your considerations as you're hunting for this or that victim?
Well, it depends. If I'm out alone and I find a body and I don't have dogs with me, there's an issue. I mean, sure. You know, obviously I can't come in and testify. I can testify physically to what I just found and saw here, but I can't, of course, bring anything psychic into it. Now, here's where the legal end goes, and this is what you have to be so careful with. One, I can't search a property without permission because I am credentialed with my dogs. I have to have proper permission or it won't hold up in court if I find something.
Understood.
So this is a sticky situation. You have to really be careful. You can say that word psychic all you want, but then you have to turn around and you have to go the legal end with the dogs because they're kind of don't in one way work together.
And rightly so.
So I have to be very careful.
Sure, and rightly so. We're talking about someone's entire life here. You know, so obviously.
Well, if I go in, I mean, if you think about this, you know, you have a good argument, and it works in many cases where evidence is thrown out, including a body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all evidence or whatever was found can be thrown out. If I was there searching without permission, for one thing, the dogs are their credentials are no good. Unless a police officer is present. Now, once there is a police, if there's a police officer present at the time that my dogs make the find, then I now have to go to court and testify along with that police officer, and I have to produce my entire last year of training records. All my certifications, along with what happened step by step by step by step, full report, basically written in military form and times and everything. It has to be extremely technical for the courts.
That's That's a consideration, I think, of psychic detective work that a lot of us really don't think about, you know, the legalistic end of it.
It is. It really isn't. But I'm going to tell you something. You know, people always say to me, well, why don't you just go out and do the search or do this or do that? Or you just let your dogs go. No. Mm. You don't just let your dogs go and then make a fine. You are 50% of this team. So
sure.
You study a lot about the wind, humidity, barometric pressures, probability of detection during certain times of the day.
So
there's a lot to learn. This is not something you step into lightly. This is a full-blown commitment.
Yeah, it's not just, in other words, the psychic part is just as important also as the detective part. So you have to have your skills of detection, just like any other investigator, constable, police officer, etc. Those have to be up to par as well, don't they?
Right. And you have to know you have to know the legal end of things. You have to know about, you know, people say, oh, wind. Okay, the wind's blowing this way, the wind's blowing that way. Well, it's not just quite that way. You're talking about humidity, barometric pressure. You're talking about all these conditions. What does it cause? Does it cause a chimney effect? Does it cause this? Does it cause that? How, you know, I can't help my dogs. We can get close, and then my dogs might be doing a certain body language, and I'm going to say, okay, my victim that I'm looking for has got to be up the hill a quarter mile.
Amazing.
Because the way the wind is, the barometric pressure, all these conditions, my dog is down here reacting, but finding nothing. That tells me it's up there. So there's a lot of conditions can create certain things.
Well, we'll definitely
it's a lot of study.
I will certainly have a lot of questions to ask about your dogs in the second half of the interview once we get beyond the commercial. Because I'm, like you said, you're only 50% of the equation, and they help out a lot. So we have a lot to ask about those. But before we do get to that break, whenever it comes, I would just sort of like to talk about maybe some of some high profile cases that you've touched upon, or perhaps have been involved with, or just found yourself sort of involved in. I know there's a famous video on YouTube where you, right? You know what I'm going to ask, right? I'll just let you take it from here.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm going to ask.
The Anthony case.
Absolutely. We're very curious about that. Can you talk about that experience?
I can.
Awesome.
I originally I do what they call a blind drive on every case. If I go out and work, I do I've coined the phrase blind drive, which is where I'm picking up that signature or that vibration, and I start where the last known place was of the person when they were alive, if we know this. When I began that search, I started at the Anthony house, and I drove right straight to the body. My problem was, and my dilemma, is I have to follow the law. It doesn't matter the psychic end, I have to follow the law.
Right.
And I couldn't cross over. So I did call on that case and let them know that I was 100% sure. I was seeing the bag. I also know when Kronk went by me because we waved at him. So anybody that knows about the case, that is how all that happened, which the public really never knew the whole case. Okay, it wasn't talked about. But while I was on the phone, that was one of those irritating moments as a psychic medium, where I was just so frustrated because they go, "Are you that dumb psychic from Ohio? You can go home."
Mm. I see. So they had to wait for a utility worker to find the body instead, and then.
Well, he had seen us standing there, so he knew right where it was. I mean, we were out there with cadaver dogs, but we could not go onto that land.
Man, it's such a sad and frustrating case.
Well, yeah, because there would have been forensic evidence left. Mm-hmm. On August 11th, when we made the location of the body.
Right.
We could not get anybody out. I even went to Texas Equisearch and asked them to please go there, and they said they couldn't. And they had already, they claimed that they had searched the one area. I said, but you did not search this area, and you need to come back. And I just got to the point where I was so frustrated over it because of the legal end of it. I spoke to Nancy Grace's field producer, and she said, you have the video? I went, yes. She goes, are you willing to hand it over? I went, at this point, of course. I'm getting nowhere.
Yeah.
And I let them have it. And, you know, of course, we know that by December 11th, how many months is that? You know,
yeah,
do the math.
Sure.
So sad because we didn't get a conviction. I'll stand by what I say. If I had been on the jury, I could not have convicted her because I didn't have 100% proof, even though I know what happened.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
so it's frustrating. August 11th, we would have got incriminating evidence.
Sure. Yeah, and the poor little girl would have been in better condition for the forensic, for the medical examiner up there, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I'm
actually going to go back to school for forensic entomology.
Whoa! Not satisfied with achieving so much. You're going to push for more. That's outstanding. Forensic, can you tell us what that is?
I am like going saying, you know what? If I get ticked off, I go back to school.
Go back to school. Awesome. Well, can you tell us? That sounds fancy. What is that?
Well, forensic entomology is actually just, I'll dumb it down. It's about the bugs and larvae that are on a body that tell you how long that body's been there. It tells you the whole story. Like bugs enter the you know, cavities first, and larvae will be in certain stages, but all these things will be in certain stages depending how long the body's been there. And that'll tell you the whole story. It'll even tell you where the injuries were, because they'll get in those first.
That's amazing. That's kind
so
of...
So forensic entomology is just an amazing, amazing subject. I mean, these are things that they use, you know, with, you know, like on CSI and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, that makes sense to me because you've been doing this for so long. You probably, it's natural to want to branch out into other areas of criminology and of investigations as well. But also, I was kind of curious too, and I know you probably, you know, can't go into details in terms of names or whatever, but if you could tell us generally, have you ever had a problem with family members? Do they ever interfere in the investigation harmfully?
You know, I don't know that I want to call it interfering, as I did have one family who kind of got really upset because, you know, I think it came down to more or less they couldn't deal with the fact that their child was gone, had been deceased, and so they really were having a hard time with this, and I
sure
certainly understand it, but they became enraged when one of my dogs actually indicated somewhere, which told me there were body fluids there, and they were enraged about it, and I had done a radio show, and I kept everything illegal, you know what I mean? I kept it legal,
right,
and didn't say, you know, anything that hadn't been announced to the public. But they just weren't dealing with it. So I can't blame them in that way. I totally understand the pain.
Sure. I mean, it's a high, the emotions are running high, and I would imagine that it could be, you know, just a typical, I guess, or not so typical, but just a job hazard, a natural side effect of what it is that you do.
Right. Most of the families, like, and I have to tell you, have been wonderful and asked that and shed many tears, and some have become very dear friends of mine.
Well, Gail, we're going to take a quick one-minute commercial break, and we're going to be right back. Just want to remind everyone, you can find Gail at PsychicGailSt.John.com. And remember, she's a Gail like a hurricane, not a G-A-I-L. And by all means, you're going to want to pick up her book, Missing and Presumed Dead. That's a gotta read. Be right back in 60 seconds.
A new era in psychic services has begun. psychicaccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Welcome back to the Psychic Viewpoint with Gail St. John. Gail, we were just talking about some of your investigations and your methods in investigating. Let's talk about your dogs, because you know they are definitely a very important part of your team. You're psychic, but your dogs also have their own powers. How do they aid your psychism?
Well, you know, there's several ways. One, we're very in tune with each other. So could I almost say they're psychic? Sure. Don't you feel that with your dogs? I mean, I ask people all the time, don't you feel in tune with your animals? I really work closely with them in a way of, I really feel what they're thinking, and they feel what I'm thinking. So I have to be careful that I don't, you know, they don't feed off of something. I sometimes actually have to block things out, because I don't want my dogs to pick up on emotions or different things.
I was going to ask you about that. Do they get depressed and sad?
They can, yeah. They can.
Sure. Sure, because dogs love
you. I try to keep things very happy, very light for them. And, you know, if I get frustrated, that goes right to them. And I don't want to send that message to them. Sometimes we work hours and hours and acres and acres and hundreds of acres. It gets tiring and it wears on everybody. But I try keeping them very happy, lighthearted. We'll take breaks. We'll sit down, get water, and do things like that.
They look for humans. They're good at finding humans. Have you ever considered about taking your team and finding contraband?
Well, you know, that's a police thing, in all reality. You know, looking for all that stuff is most of your police officers and police departments have those types of dogs. What most of them don't have is a dog that is HRD, and HRD means human remains detection. So, and they also don't have dogs that find live humans. Now, they have dogs that will go out and track down someone who's, you know, done a crime, and they'll bring the dog out to track them. But that's a whole different thing. When my live find dog goes out, she's looking for someone who's lost, who is alive. So I have one dog that does live finds. I have two dogs that do human remains detection.
This is actually
and
a very
I'm training
good,
my fourth.
This is a great opportunity because, you know, so far we've talked about the unfortunate, the lost, the doomed, the people who've been victimized. Let's be a little bit more optimistic, because sometimes you locate the living, don't you?
Absolutely. And my one female, her name is Kendall, she trains on what we call rubble piles. And we have simulated disasters. Let's say a tornado hits an area. We have to train in those conditions of houses that have been destroyed and, you know, 2-3-story buildings that have collapsed. So we have rubble we have to actually climb up on with our safety gear. We'll be wearing 40-some pounds of gear on us and climbing. And then anybody goes to my website, they'll see me with some of my gear on.
Yeah, that's an awesome. The only thing that's missing from your gear is the word psychic on the back of your emergency. That would just be awesome. On the back of your emergency jacket.
But
you know how the cops have,
but you'll
you know,
see that
or
and they're climbing around. And it's another one of the things we train for, and we're actually part of a district task force in my state, which works with FEMA and Homeland Security. So we are called out and would be called out for any of the disasters that happen, like 911, all those different things. We will be called out for those disasters. And this is what my live dog trained for. So say somebody's buried in the rubble, and they can't call out, but they're alive. So these dogs will climb all over this dangerous, dangerous collapsed buildings and locate people that are alive.
Just putting myself in that situation for 5 seconds, you know, fills me with a bunch of gratitude to the dog, because it's a frightening scenario to be helpless and basically, feeling, hey, I'm not going to make it out of this one. And so to have the dogs come through and yourself come through at the last minute for a rescue, that certainly has to be a wonderful feeling. But you mentioned a student of yours, and this makes me curious. Because I'm curious about the up-and-coming crop, the new crop of psychic investigators. Earlier you described your method as partly tracing out a sort of an electromagnetic signature. And so this is very scientific. It seems like something that could be replicated. Can you tell us a little bit about your instructing and your teaching and, you know, about the new generation of psychic investigators that
Sure.
you're helping to shape?
And if anybody watched the blind drive, they will see one of my students, Travis Sanders, as I'm teaching him. Yes, we do it. I'm
that
a very hands-on teacher. And I said, very good, and you'll see me come back and say, okay, now if I go this way, what are you feeling? And he's like, I got it. I'm feeling it. And that's the idea. I like to take students right out on a case. But I can also take students out when we hide somebody. Because people can find live people, too. You don't need a dog always. So if you take and hide somebody, I take a student, after they've been out there for a couple hours, I tell them, take a book. You're going to need to read for a while. The vibration is strong now, just like the scent for a dog. The longer they've been out there, the vibration is stronger. And the longer they've been out there, the scent is stronger for a dog. So if we're not using a dog, I still want them to be out there for a couple hours. And then I begin by telling them, shut your eyes. And I'll go, I'm going to run into a tree. No, you're not. Believe me, trust yourself. Trust yourself. You won't run into a tree. Put your hand out. You're not feeling so that you physically hit the tree, you will feel the vibration changes as you walk. Trees feel different than concrete, than a person. Begin to open yourself up to feeling those vibrations and those waves.
Sure.
That's key to learning.
So what we're talking about is like an interference to my force field. You know, something that's impinging upon my force field, and I detect a presence there. Oh, that's a tree. There's a presence there, and I have to be careful around that presence. I have to take note of that presence so that I don't bust my glasses or break my nose or miss this hidden victim.
We're a very physical people, so sometimes we have a hard time. And I tell students, stop looking with your eyes. Those aren't going to help you.
Yeah, the detectives have those
already. Look with what's inside you, what is given to you, your ability, use it. Really hone those skills. So, like I said, I take the students out and actually do these things. That's the only way you really learn, and that's when you begin to trust yourself and know that you've walked up to a tree and you can go, oh, what a feeling this gives off. Wow, just running my hand 6 inches from it, I feel so different. And now I move to the next tree. It's similar, but different. That's, can be because it's a different kind of tree. Huh. All things have different vibrations. When you become more and more sensitive to it, you can put a blindfold on and walk through the woods. You'll be fine. You'll find the person.
What do you look for in a student?
you know, the first thing I always look for is not the student who brags about how good they are. I look for the student who has an eagerness and desire to open themselves up to everything. Let nothing hold them back. And ego certainly becomes a problem and doesn't mix with this work.
So it's not for everybody?
No, absolutely not. I've come across some very egotistical people, and I'll honestly tell you their abilities are good, but when that ego steps in, it's like a complete conflict. And that it becomes their actual tool that blocks them.
What would you say to those listening who may feel as if they're psychic, those listening who get very good intuitions but never listen to them because they are not psychic? You know, they maybe don't give their intuition enough credit. What can you say to those folks who may feel as if they don't have any aptitude for increasing their psychism?
I tell people every day we're all born with an ability. Sure. Just like animals, we are animals. Animals know when they're becoming prey. They know when to run. They know when someone's watching them. They know all these things. So do we. We just have to tune in. Now, not everybody is a mathematician. I'm terrible at math, okay? But there are some people who are mathematicians, okay? So all of us aren't going to have the same degree of ability.
Right,
that's for
right.
sure. Take the skills that you do have and work with them. Listen to your intuition, your feelings. These things will never steer you wrong if you use them in your everyday life. They're there to help you to get through life.
It is a very strange and helpful calculus indeed for us. But I want to ask you this. If you think of offenders versus victims, what do you think about the notion that maybe the victim did not listen to their own psychic powers or psychic feelings or spirit guides, whereas the offender perhaps did follow a psychic instinct? What do you think about that notion? Does that feel like nonsense maybe?
I know people that have been in this situation, you know, or different situations. They lived through it, but they were lucky to have lived through it. But, you know, I will say that you know yourself. You ever sat somewhere and knew somebody was staring at you?
And you
work with it, and then others will say, oh, that's nonsense. I'm just being, you know, silly. You know, always follow those instincts. And if they do, sometimes these people would still be alive. Now, do I say that, the murderer has an ability? Listen, it just doesn't say that only somebody that's good can have this ability. Mm-hmm. So by the same token, that person can find their victim a lot easier.
Right.
By saying, this person is going to be the right victim because they do not listen to their inner self.
Right.
I feel like I can really wrap them around my finger and get them where I want them.
And meanwhile, the offender is accustomed to paying very close attention to his instincts and the gurglings of his intuition. He knows
Absolutely.
To trust his instincts, doesn't he? That's very scary.
And this is where
I
talk about serial killers. They're often very in tune, and it's a shame. They're very in tune, and they use their ability the wrong way.
For people to study under those experienced and who know, such as yourself, those who have a very, very impressive curriculum vitae, but who are also very humble and dedicated to service to humanity. Because I tell you, folks, Gail St. John has been climbing over all sorts of inhospitable terrain. She's filled people's families' lives with closure and relief. And, you know, it's not like she lives in Miami Beach or, you know, a posh mansion. Gail St. John has not exploited this need. She's done a lot of good, and it's a service to humanity. It's a service to humanity. So as far as I'm concerned, it's people like Gail saying, people like yourself, Gail. I don't mean to sit here and talk about you like you don't exist, like you're not here. It's people like yourself, I think, who are I don't even want to say obligated, but we are obligated to entrust our education to people such as yourself. You're one of the trustworthy shepherds in psychism. Now, I also wanted to ask you, Gail, if, and again, I understand you might not be at liberty to give revealing details, and I certainly don't want you to get yourself in any legal hot water, but is there any particular victim or case that maybe has stuck with you over the years that you just can't shake off?
Oh yes.
And I apologize. Oh. I should ask your permission, if it's okay, if you don't mind speaking about that as well. I hate to.
Yeah, it just frustrates me. There was a case where I found a body. I know what happened. Okay, I named names. I know what happened. And there's no way even the family said, how could you know those names? Well, it's, to me, that's a dumb question to them. They're like, wow. But I had the victim tell me these things. But what frustrated me the most is it was a rushed autopsy. A lot of mistakes were made. And what I'll do, not mean to sound gruesome, but, autopsies are supposed to be clearing what, and telling us how this person died. Well, they said he died from an overdose. He was a drug addict, but he had an overdose of Tylenol in his system. That doesn't go with smoking crack. So right. They claimed that he had committed suicide. But when they found the body and when they got there, when they did the initial examination, they found a tube shoved down his throat and down through the esophagus. Now, I, don't mean this in a joking way, and I do. When's the last time you contemplated suicide and shoved a tube down your throat so you could dump the pills in?
No way.
Well, you and I say no way, and the coroner put this through as a suicide. I was enraged. The family was enraged. They fought this for 3 years, and finally they removed it and said, unknown, undetermined. The death was unknown, undetermined.
It's difficult to intubate yourself. There's a gag reflex.
Yeah, it wasn't happening, and that isn't what happened. And after I found his body, 2 days later, he kept coming to me and saying, my keys are there. Go to the certain place. My keys are there, and my wallet are there. And then look for the car tracks. And so the family was able to go down there, find the keys, his wallet. Now, the police had done a clean sweep, they said.
Let me ask you this. And,
do you understand the frustration there?
I've asked about conflict with the police. I've asked about conflict with the families. And this is probably the most difficult one of all. Do you ever, because you're the one talking to spirits, perhaps they hold, do you ever feel they hold you accountable for things? Do you ever feel like they might be getting angry at you?
Yeah, I do sometimes. I mean, and I know they
That's
don't mean
hurt.
It that way, but it's
right.
It's frustrating for me. It's frustrating for them. Like in this case, he did not kill himself.
Yeah.
Witnesses told from up on a hill, there was a trailer park. Witnesses told of a car that had pulled down there, had the trunk open the day before, and threw something into the creek. It was his body.
Oh my God. That's.
But yet, they're saying it's suicide. Well, so he jumped in a trunk, jumped out of a trunk, shoved a tube. It's that moment when you just want to rip your hair out and go, seriously.
Well, I'll tell you what, Gail, we're coming down to the short hairs here. I want to ask you a quick question. How do you protect yourself, your emotions and your psyche?
I do a lot of meditation. I have to sit down and just absorb what happened, meditate, and then sometimes, you know, after I find the body, I'll sleep literally 2 to 3 days.
Well, you know what? You've been doing this for 30 years, and now you, I do believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you've expressed an interest to expand, go into forensic etymology, et cetera, and you are now accepting clients. Am I right about that?
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely.
I want a reading with you. I have a loved one who's passed. I'm desperate to contact that loved one. How do I get a hold of you to make that happen?
Well, you can email me at k9search@ymail.com, or you can call my number and leave a message. Generally, you will have to leave a message because of my training is so lengthy, but you can call 419-491-7283. Leave me a message. I do return calls.
Okay, and your email address, is that the letter K and the number 9, or spelled out K9?
Yep, the letter K and then the number 9, and then search.
K9search@ymail.com. Very good, very good. Well, Gail, I can't thank you enough for coming here tonight and enlightening us with your knowledge and your stories. I want to remind everyone, please find Gail St. John at psychicgailstjohn.com. And again, that's Gail like the storm, G-A-L-E, and not G-A-I-L or G-A-Y-L-E, and any other permutation thereof of that beautiful name, but psychic, G-A-L-E, stjohn.com. Pick up her book, Missing and Presumed Dead. You will certainly be glad you did. Perfect summer reading, especially if
and that is,
like,
there is another book actually called, I'm sorry to interrupt you, there's another book called Missing and Presumed Dead. But it's, if you look for Missing and Presumed Dead, A Psychic Search for Justice, or you can just put on, if you're doing Amazon, just put in Gail St. John and my book will pop up.
Beautiful, beautiful. You
and there is a Kindle edition.
All right. Well, Gail, I really do appreciate you coming on, and I hope you have a lovely evening. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
All right. All right. Well, that was excellent. We had Gail St. John tonight, folks. We had a wonderful interview with her. I want to go into make a few announcements here real fast before I weigh in here with my co-hosts. Be sure to stay tuned for the second half of our show. We are not done yet. We still have an hour left to give you guys free on-air readings with our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper handy. If you couldn't catch last week's show, by all means, visit psychicaccesstalkradio.com and locate it under the Archives tab. You'll be able to find last week's show plus all other shows at psychicaccesstalkradio.com under Archives. We ask that you, by all means, go there and enjoy what you see and circulate it around to your friends. You might know someone who would love to hear about this or that certain topic. There are a ton of topics for you to enjoy, so go check that out. Also, while you're there, check out psychicbloggers.com, where you're going to find tons of blogs from all of the Psychic Access psychics on every single subject, from psychic development to reincarnation and everything in between. And if you want a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you're going to find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from whichever psychic you choose. There are several pages there, so by all means, go check it out. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic on the site. Myself and all of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access as psychics. And if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, myself, Nona Marie, Steve, Maureen, any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading for traffic diverted to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room and to listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone. So by all means, please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Nona Marie, are you there? Scrambling for the mute button. No, she...
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about What did you think about the interview?
I thought it was fantastic, and I wish I could do the, some of that work. It's so amazing what she does, and what a lot of strength, though, also to have to handle all the people that use her services, because it's kind of a, you know, a sad field to work in while also being really exciting and great. And I loved what she said about meditating and, you know, clearing herself, because sometimes we forget as people who work with energies and entities and people on the other side, it can be really exhausting and we can really get off center and it can affect us very, very strongly. So I'm very happy that you asked about that, and I love the answer that she gave for that. It's amazing work.
Yeah, most people think that meditation is quite hard. Would you agree with that or disagree?
Well, you know, it really depends on the person. I know lots of people who find it virtually impossible to meditate, and but I do think it is easy, and I think there's lots and lots of different ways. Chanting, meditation through Tai Chi. I used to meditate doing long-distance running and just kind of zoning out during the run, and I think... I just wish people would look around more for different kinds of meditation, because sometimes I feel like people, like Cinderella's stepsisters, try to squeeze themselves into a glass slipper of some form of meditation that doesn't fit them. So my meditation teacher, he teaches in Malaysia something called guided movements, which is a moving meditation. And when he came to the United States, he had to switch to sitting meditation, because that's what the U.S. people seem to like more. So there really are different kinds of meditating that people can do. And I think also people feel they have to meditate for like 2 hours. Even if you meditate for, you know, a minute, 10 times a day, or, you know, twice a day, that's better than nothing in my book. And it, you get better at it, just like you get better at everything else. So yeah, I think it's definitely worth pursuing.
That kind of turns on the head my notion of meditation. I never considered kinesthetic meditation, you know, this running meditation. We tend to think of meditation as quieting this and quieting that and stillness.
Right.
And that's very interesting. Well, Maureen, I'm curious. Yes. What your take on this subject is. Nona Marie talked about how, you know, people in stressful psychic work, yeah, like ourselves, maybe not so stressful as Gail St. John's, but people in stressful psychic work, we need to meditate. We need to clear the air,
mind,
so to speak.
Quiet.
Yeah, what do you
mind.
Do?
How do I quiet do do? My mind? I don't.
Right.
No. Interesting. I'm glad that Nona Marie brought this up, because I've said this before, maybe people have heard it, but it was 1973. The first Maharishi, and Nona Marie may remember this, you know, transcendental, you know, meditation, mm-hmm, was, anyway, I was 13, 14 years old, and I worked to pay for my, to pay my way to do TM, right? And at that time, there was these rules, right? Okay, you had to do it. And like you're talking about, you know, Nona, about, you know, my God. So here I am, a young person really wanting to do this, but I was told I had to do it this way, and I had to do it at least this amount of time, and it really turned me off, because I'm not that type of person anyway that can be so structured in things. I'm hyper. But so through the years of growing up and through the years now going to my, you know, so many mirrors of later, years of looking at myself get older, looking in the mirror going, what is it? No. Years later, now I'm, you know, at this age, I found now that, you know, I like to tell people meditate, and it could, like Nona was saying, and I'm not trying to be disgusting, even when you're sitting on the toilet just going pee, 5 seconds, whatever it takes, whatever moment you have, it can take a moment. Right. It doesn't pertain to everybody, but also dancing for me. And I love what, mm-hmm, you talk about running. Dancing, mm-hmm, I love to dance. And I'm pretty good, too.
Demonstration?
If my knee's up on me, I was always into dancing, and I used to win the club. But dancing for me... I know, I love it, but dancing brings about something that's meditative, or can, it does. That's my thing. But also, I do love lately, and it's kind of silly, but I listen to these YouTube The only thing, when I'm really tired and I'm about to pass out, these 3D meditations on this one guy, and he's kind of cheesy, but, and it's not really Tibetan or anything like that, but it's guided meditations about telling you how wonderful you are, but it's in 3D, and I said, and the 3D, what's so great is I'm getting ready to lay down to go to sleep or try to sleep anyway. So the bottom line is I don't feel like I have any time frame in it. You know, I don't have to do it because I pass out anyway, but affirmations are going on. But the 3D thing, it's like he's right in front of your face. He's right on your ear. It's entertaining for me, and that works for me too.
One of the things that really interested me about Gail St. John is that, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but for me, locating lost objects is maybe one of the more difficult psychic tasks to perform for a client.
Yeah,
I'm curious what you guys, if you guys have found that. I mean, this is hard stuff to do, isn't it? It's not trivial or easy stuff to do. It's hard.
Well, for me, I would never. You know, she's talking about also people or people's body. You know, people like children or people. Wasn't she saying, okay. Well, it was interesting because I was in criminology. I went back as an adult reentry back to college, 33, studying criminology. And the professor was fantastic. He really liked me. He loved the fact that I was doing psych, you know, that's what was my professional work. He goes, you would be fantastic with the FBI. And he brought his son-in-law to be at the FBI saying, and I go, well, I'm not one of the people they'd want, but they do want to work with people. They do. They're more and more. But I never pursued it to the point, but also with that, I do child finders. I still participate, but you don't. I'm not on the field like your guest is talking about on the field.
Nor am I.
No, but we, all the people, we get together and we do a matrix type of, it's a certain way of going about, you know, northeast, if we're seeing the northwest, if you're seeing a certain area of the country or wherever these children or who also adults might be. And what it is, it's almost like doing a control type of way, not just whatever you're getting, it can make some sense. And all the, everybody in the United, actually every state wants anything they can from us. Because what they do is they gather all the information, which might help. But for finding lost objects, and I don't want to call a kid a lost object, okay? So for me, I would never, I'm not, you know what? I'm not good at it. My mind doesn't even know where I leave my keys in the refrigerator.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I never could.
No.
For example, when my clients ask me about a lost object, thank God, it's never something so serious as what we dealt with tonight. It's usually, you know, things like, I can't find my wallet. Did I leave my weight set over it? You know what I'm saying? It's usually that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that is hard enough.
I don't know. I need a metal detector for finding rings or something. I can't myself. I don't know what Nona feels. That's too much pressure. I don't advertise myself as being one that can do that. So I can't. I think it's fantastic if you have be able to tune in like that. You know, that takes some really discipline.
Well, I think it's like a subspecialty within the broader psychic framework. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, in medicine, they have various types of transplant surgeons and various types of practice.
Exactly. A specialty. That is definitely a specialty.
She's been doing this for like 30 years. You know,
she could tune into, I don't know, Nona, are you one that, like, homie, don't play that game. I don't do it. I would never say I couldn't, but I can make it.
Yeah, that's something I do. That's not the thing I do, except by luck. Every once in a while, I'll know something, but not if I'm specifically asked to do it. It usually doesn't happen. So
if something comes up, that's the same way. If it just comes out of my mouth without being asked, but if I'm asked, I'm not going to make up a story.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that amazed me about Gail St. John is that, you know, her relationship with the machinery, so to speak, the emergency services. She's integrated into the emergency services. You know, usually a lot of times with psychic investigators, they have to pretty much take the initiative with law enforcement. But Gail St. John by now is, well, she's one of the most renowned psychic investigators in the world. But again, she's the sort who, you know, she'll locate the body, she'll go as far as she legally can go with it, and then inform law enforcement, hey, you guys need to come and check this out. That, to me, is just, wow, it's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And really, every time we talk to we have a medium or a psychic on the show who speaks with those on the other side, it just gives me, this might sound crazy, but it gives me a warm fuzzy, because once again, is that there's that confirmation that after the final curtain call, you know, maybe I'm not done yet. You know what I'm saying? That's sort of a big deal. And when you're confronted with something irrefutable, such as the work of Gail St. John, to me, it's just the most comforting thing in the world. Well, you know what? While I have the floor here, I might as well go ahead and dispense the call-in number for those of you who would like to get a free call, free reading. The call-in number is 724-444-4851. And again, that is 724-444-4851. So when you call, you're going to be automatically placed on hold, and we're going to get to you in the order that we receive the call. So you'll be able to listen to the show as you're waiting. And once you do get onto the line, we ask that you're very direct and clear with your question. And we also respectfully ask that you try to keep the question as centered around you as much as possible. We'd like to avoid questions such as, you know, does my Uncle Saul really have $30,000 squirreled away in a fruit mason jar in his backyard? You know what I'm saying, Anna Marie? We don't want to go that route. We're not going to answer questions like that, I'll tell you that right off the bat. So let's just keep it focused on yourself. Right?
I love that. Perfect.
Hey, you know, some people don't trust banks, Anna Marie. They do not trust banks at all.
And, do you, Stephen? Do you trust the banks? I bet.
The older I get, Maureen, the harder I find it to trust anyone.
I feel I can find it. I feel it might be lost inside your guitar.
No, I tell you, I do trust banks. And as a consequence, you know, my economic life is completely abstracted like a video game. You know what I'm saying? It's numbers on a screen, nothing more than that. I don't really even feel, I mean, I hate to say this, but I don't even feel any particular attachment to it. I mean, I do, obviously, but it's just so abstract.
Funds to buy things?
I mean, it's just so abstract.
No, I would like to barter and trade is the best way to go, okay?
But I've actually benefited from the barter system.
Absolutely. And you know what? You still, you know, it's just, you, well, yeah.
it's tried good. And true.
It's good.
You know, we're psychics, so we have a little bit of sort of transaction security built into us, so it's definitely not bad. It's great to be psychic, but again, you know, as we saw tonight, there's some challenges as well. I know you, Maureen, you're a very receptive person, and you have a lot of energy to boot, so I can imagine
people, in fact, it's really, I'm not feeling sorry for myself, but a friend of mine, I had found out Sunday, she had a aneurysm. She got a second chance. She's alive. And I rushed down to Newport Beach, which is about an hour and a half from me. And I've known her since I was five. And she's like a family connection to me. Sure. You know, I went there, and all I got was, and she just had gotten out of the ICU. She's been out a week. I'm so happy she's okay. But I don't see her all the time. But we go back so far. But it was really sad. And I didn't want to make it all about me. I'm glad I went. But I left there in tears, because I am very hyper. I'm fast. I go fast. It's hard for me to slow down sometimes, but that's who I am. And she's known me for so long, and the fact that she started picking on me in every little thing, who I was, what I wasn't, she started putting me really nasty. And I know that I feel like, oh my gosh. And I go, this is, but you know, then I'm going, you know what? People know who I am. I am what I am. I am what I am, what I am.
That's
and
right.
If you want to slow me down, slow me down. But I can't help it if I'm picking up too much stuff. I need to learn on my own terms. There's no reason to belittle me. And
absolutely not. Yeah.
So there you have it. Anybody try it? Come on. Put up your dukes.
Well, Dr. Nona Marie, I want to ask you this as well, because like Gail St. John, you also have a relationship with animals. How do your animals help you to sort of decompress from any psychic residues that you might pick up from your clients' problems? Aren't you an equestrian? Am I right about that? Or
yeah, I have two horses, two Arabians that talk to me in my head all the time, and I think horses in particular are very therapeutic. I'm not sure why that is, but I know there's actually been a lot of research done with horses helping autistic people get very grounded and get them very functional. And there's a lot of theories about why that happens. I'm not really sure of the science behind it, but I definitely agree that horses are absolutely amazing. And I found even if I'm very sick, if I climb on a horse, something happens with their energy field that I get over being sick by the end of a ride. And they're just, I can't describe it. It's just amazing. But I've heard people say the same thing about different breeds of dogs, that they have very, very different personalities. And I know with horses, some of them are really built to be therapy horses. Some are not. I have a boy horse, and I tried to do a little therapy session with him and a woman, and he just wanted to play games. He was not at all interested in being a therapy horse. And I kind of knew that, but I thought I'd give him a chance anyway.
Well, let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about this because your PhD is in psychology, if I'm not mistaken, right? So I want to ask you about, I'm curious about what the consciousness of a horse, I know they're very intelligent, but I'm curious what level or what degree of consciousness a horse might have, what your idea of that is.
Yeah, and well, you know, actually there was a study done a few years ago, I think it was in Europe, where it was declared that animals are actually sentient beings. And there was enough research behind it to declare that from the scientific community. But if you go back to any indigenous people, Aborigines, Native Americans, they find sentient knowledge in anything. And I would agree with that. I think your guest also talked about feeling energy from trees. Well, I've done meditations with trees that have told me things and with rocks that have told me information and knowledge that we would consider as coming from a human being, though it's communicated in very different ways. So I find animals to be the same way, and they're very different. Some animals are not so bright. Some animals are incredibly talented in healing. Some animals are funny. My boy horse is very funny. He's always playing jokes, and he's always trying to make me laugh. My girl horse is nothing like that at all. She's very serious, and she's kind of a watchdog, and she's a little bit of a healer as well. So I think it's hard to generalize, but I would say that I actually had my meditation teacher put the energy, the being of a rock, into a human out in the woods, and there's about 10 of us that watched him do this. And then the person who did this, he said he felt himself off to sort of the left, like in his head, he was like off to the left, and this rock person was in him. And we got to ask questions, and the rock person talked to us. It wasn't in good English, and it was hard for that rock person to get some concepts close to us, communicated. And what was amazing is the guy who did this, our meditation teacher, he lit two candles, and when he slapped the rock to move the rock being into the human body, and when he did that, the candle flames went down to a barely lit, and there was no wind, they weren't flickering. And when he was finished, he slapped the human being to move chi energy force of the rock back into the rock. Those flames went back up like about an inch high.
Oh my goodness.
And it was really amazing visual. And then the guy who did this, he said it was a sentient being inside of him. It just wasn't human. And the thought processes were quite different. And there wasn't like, you know, emotional stuff like I'm mad at my mother. You know, there wasn't that kind of information running around, but there was definitely feelings and concepts and conclusions and thoughts from this being that was a rock. So there is some science that talks about this, but science is usually 10 to 20,000 years behind indigenous cultures.
So
I agree with what your guest said, which is, you know, go out and feel energies. I relate very heavily to rocks and to trees, and some people relate more, say, to quartz crystals or some kind of crystal meditation. I like to meditate with heavy ores and iron and pyrite and a meteorite, actually, also. And that's a very, very different journey than working with, say, rose quartz or tourmaline or something else. So I think we all have different sensitivities, and we like different things. Like if you travel around the world, you might like Mexican people, but not like Chinese people. So we relate differently to rocks and trees and horses and dogs. And I even, I had a snake for a long time, and I got him from a snake rescue, and the man who ran it, He said the snakes absolutely had personalities, and he matched their personalities with the owners that he gave them to. And my snake, he was given to me while I was teaching a class in college, and he wrapped himself around my wrist and didn't move for 3 hours while I gave a lecture. And he knew when the class was over, he started moving.
That's a smart snake.
It was crazy. And he was always like that. I'd take him to parties and he'd be wrapped around my neck and he'd never move until it was time to leave the party.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Nona Marie, I'm glad you have the floor here because we have a caller from New Jersey for toi.
Okay. For you. Hello, New Jersey.
Hi, yes.
Hi, what's your name?
Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. What can I do for you?
Hi. I just met a guy. We like, you know, getting to know each other. We talking and everything. Do you see this like going anywhere?
What's his first name, please?
Nate.
I'm sorry?
Nate.
Nate?
Yes.
It's a little early to say, but I will say that Nate is still... He kind of like wants to see the entire world. He's full of energy. I don't think he's ready to settle down. He feels like there's a lot of adventure still in front of him in life. He's got a very bright spirit. And it does feel to me like you are more interested in kind of having roots in a way. It is possible that you, if you were willing to kind of put everything in storage and go travel around with him, but I don't think you're willing to do that. He's a really nice guy. He's got great energy. And I think he's very honest. And I think he's very attracted to you. But honestly, I think if you pushed it, he would have an affair with you and then tell you, you know, he's moving on. Not to another woman, but to another adventure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you could have a great time with him, but I don't think he's settled down material. And then he won't be, I don't think, for about another 5 or 6 years. He's got that kind of itch in him right now. So it's nothing you've done wrong or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'd have fun with him, though. He's a nice guy.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nona Marie. You can find Nona Marie at psychicaccess.com. Now we have a caller from Georgia for Maureen.
Thank you, Stephen. Hello, Georgia, state of, and my name's Maureen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. May I have your name, please?
Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. And what can I help you with?
I am trying to find out. I'm waiting to hear from Emory University concerning a position that I applied for. And I'm trying to see if I'll be called for an interview and if it'll be successful for hire.
Okay, got it. So you have already done it. You've applied. Okay, got it. And university. Okay. Well, this is what I'm getting. Let's put it this way. I'm really glad to hear whatever is you're pursuing is fantastic timing for you right now because you're not getting acknowledged or have been whatever it is you were recently or in moving forward right now. I see a big burden coming off your back and I do see you getting contacted within the – you know, when I say time frame, I may not be perfect in my time frame, but what I'm seeing is within the next 6 weeks, within that time period, I am seeing you getting contacted, and it does feel like there's I see a young man here who looks like he's in some position that I think what I'm getting at that he's no longer because he's burnt out. And I feel that you may be taking over his, and it's not a bad thing or anything like that, but you fuse really well. But I see you and somebody else also, and this is more of, there'll be more generosity in financial means, okay? It's really good. And you said you applied to several, not just one, correct?
I did what?
You said you applied to several different, not just one particular position. So
one there.
No, you said did you apply to several different departments in the university?
No, just the one particular.
The one.
Position.
Okay. Well, I do see, and I don't know when you're looking at getting a call or connecting or whatever, but like I said, I see within 6 weeks you'll know, and I do see you moving forward, and it looks so positive. One person isn't real supportive about it. That doesn't matter. Like somebody that's like your friend. Whatever you feel right, I feel it's really a great step forward, and I do see it being a really great potential and opportunity.
Okay.
Okay, and you did it. Don't even thank me for saying what I said. This is your reading. So, anyway, I hope I helped you.
Okay. And as far as timing,
I can only do one question. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Maureen. You can find Maureen at psychicaccess.com. By all means, visit her there and schedule some time with her. You'll be very glad that you did. I have a caller from Ohio. Hello, Ohio. How are you?
Sherry from Harriet.
Hello, Ohio. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Hello. What may I ask your name, Adam?
Sherry.
Sherry, okay. What's your question, Sherry?
Do you see me getting the money so I can file bankruptcy soon?
Okay, you want to know if I see you getting money so you can make a file for bankruptcy soon?
Yeah, bankruptcy soon.
Okay, let's see if this is going to unfold for you, okay?
Yes.
Fortunately, my friend, you're going to be the easiest caller tonight. I'm getting a very clear yes that you will be able to make that filing with no problem. So if that means you have to get some support from someone else or from some other area, support from funds in order to make the filing, that's going to happen for you, okay? So that this is going to work out well for you, Sherry, okay?
So I hope it happens soon.
It should happen pretty soon for you. I'm, not clear on the time, but weeks should be appropriate here. Yeah. Months at the outside, okay?
Okay.
All right. We appreciate you calling. Now you have a good one.
Yes.
All righty. Okay, now we have a caller from New York for Dr. Nona Marie.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Oops, I'm sorry. What's your name?
Giselle.
How can I help you?
Thanks. Yeah, I want to know what you can tell me about my relationship status at the moment.
Your relationship with, I'm sorry?
Status.
How do you spell that? I can't.
No, my
is that
status,
an A?
Like me.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
I'm sorry? Say again, you're breaking up a little bit. I couldn't understand. What's the name of the person?
Oh, his name is Jeremy.
Oh, Jeremy. I'm sorry. Okay. So you're asking me about relationship status. Okay. Got it.
Yes.
It feels to me like Jeremy is pretty cranky right now in the relationship and feels like he has pulled away a bit. It also feels to me like he has some other women around him, females, that he's kind of flirts with, he's kind of interested in. So I would say you kind of have a handful right now in dealing with him. You could get him back. You could get him in a relationship. He's not that committed to being monogamous right now. He's just thinking about it, but not really. He's feeling like it's not really his time to settle down. So I would say to you, he'd be good boyfriend material for now, but he would not be good relationship material for you right now. And he's not very honest sometimes. He's not so much a liar, but he kind of lies by omission. He just leaves things out when he thinks it will upset people. And I think one of the things that happens is you feel this. You're very perceptive. You have a very strong radar about people. And you feel when he's lying, but you don't know what he's lying about, and he tries to talk you out of it, and I think this makes you feel a little bit crazy. So that part I'd be very careful of, because when somebody does that to us and makes us feel crazy, after a while, it can be very destabilizing. So I would say if you could have a light relationship with him, have fun with him, you're okay. But if you are looking for something deeper between the fact that he's not that honest and you're so super sensitive and you have great radar about people being honest, I think this relationship will be a very big strain for you. So I would say look at easing your way out of it. And I think it's going to be a while before you have a solid relationship with somebody. Right now, your radar is set for guys that are not not particularly stable for you. You're sort of drawn to, you know, sometimes we have a radar set for, say, chocolate ice cream, and chocolate ice cream is good for a treat, but it's not really good for a meal. So your radar for men tends to go towards men that are good for a treat, not for a relationship. I think a little bit of work on that for yourself through meditation and reading some self-help books, etc., will help you shift your radar so that you can start looking into somebody else who's looking for a relationship like you are.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that help? Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, because you were really on point. So, I mean, yeah, good advice.
Okay. Good. Take care of yourself. You deserve that, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. If you would like to have access to the wisdom and the psychic powers of Dr. Nona Marie Fuhr, or myself, or Maureen, or any of us, by all means, visit psychicaccess.com. Speaking of Maureen, you have a caller from California.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Stephen. Hello, California. Sure. Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, may I have your name, please?
Gina.
Gina?
Gina, yeah.
Yeah, hi, Gina. My name's Maureen. What can I help you with?
Hi, Maureen. I just randomly called in. I always listen to your show. I just want to know, am I on the right path in life? I know that's pretty vague.
You know what? Because there are time restraint on the short readings, you know. Could you be more direct so I can help you better? It absolutely would help you better because that's a big... You know, it's more than I can
know,
help you
with. It's really vague. With work, maybe? Am I on the right path?
With your work? Like, right? Is that what you said, with the work you're doing?
Yeah, the work I'm doing.
That's better. That's much easier. I'm just trying to help you as best as I could with the short amount of time. Okay. What I'm seeing here is, you know, it looks like you're having a hard time sleeping a bit, like you're waking up interrupted sleep, and I do feel it's because you've kind of found out about somebody around your life. This goes into your work, though, but that now you know who they are. They're a little bit of troublemakers, a troublemaker who used to be like a friend, but I see that you recently have received good news about some opportunity, but it feels like you're not sharing it with people that you may normally have done so. I don't see a lot of support system around you. You know what I mean? With anything that you're thriving for, you're at a process right. You're at a crossroads right now, that you're really it's like a premeditation of thinking about some big decision you're thinking about making, but the fear of poverty, which I'm not saying it's real, but the fear of, you know, lacking funds, and also, you know, Gina, I want to ask you something. Are you in a situation right now where you're really feeling like there's something else you need to go for that you have been fearing? And I know you could do well at it, but it's a personal thing that deeply, like my work is very personal. Everybody is, but some people's are more so. Are you trying to just break away and go for something that maybe everybody else would not be supportive about and have not yet done this? Because I feel that it's time. Are you at a crossroads like that? Is that like a timeline for you right now?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of at a crossroads because my life's kind of up in the air. So, you know, I'm in a job I'm not really happy with. I like my job. I don't get paid enough. That's the problem. I live in California, you know?
Yeah, I live in California down in the beach. I know how expensive it is down here. I believe you, me. It's ridiculous. But it also feels like you're not happy. It's the energy around that environment is no good. And I feel like in some ways you're going through useless sacrifice. And when I say that, being nailed to the cross, like metaphorically, Jesus nailed to the cross, but resurrection got to occur. That's useful sacrifice, and it's painful. But when you go through useless, you're nailed to the cross, but you're not going to resurrect. What good is that? I feel that there's some other opportunity that you know about already, but you're just there's a timeline here for you, and you could cross over, but you don't have a lot of embracing of support coming from the village or from your community. But absolutely, I would focus on useful sacrifice right now and anything that comes your way that would be an opportunity. I just feel that it's time. It's almost like I see you need to break free. Like break free. I see you getting your personal power back. I see after the first of the year, I do feel if you can reach out somewhere, I see you doing something on your own, or you have some great ideas about something, but I do see you reaching out on your own. By about the first of the year, I feel that your personal power is so intact, you're able to bring about anything that you really want and make happen. And you have a lot going for you, and where you're working right now, you're not able to show it off. You're not able to show everybody what you got. You don't. And that's keeping
that's
you back.
Yeah.
You know, that's not
Pardon?
A good feeling inside. So if you haven't been reaching, but I did, like I said, I see some really good news recently. But like I said, it's hard not having support when someone's going, yeah, I'm really backing you. I think I do not see that around you. And that is hard. It's very difficult. People can say otherwise. But I honestly feel there's something there for you, and I feel that you should go for it. Be the dreamer. Jump. Fearless. And I see new beginnings, a new enthusiasm for life, and a whole new feeling. But you're not going to have anybody going, oh, that's really smart, and do that. No one is in that mode, but you're different, okay? You're special.
I'm friends with your cousin. Octavia, she's the one that turned me on to this show.
Oh, my third cousin. Yeah, my second. Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Tell her I'm crazy.
Yeah, she's the one.
Okay, now I hope that. Oh, that's funny. I have everybody. She's my third cousin, I think, something like that. Tell her, thank you. Well, I hope I helped
weird.
You, Gina.
You sound like her. You sound like her on the phone.
I've never even met her either. I've never even met her. It's so funny. It's on my mom's side.
She's worth meeting. You should meet her. She's great.
I want to meet her. She lives close by. Thank you, Gina. That's funny. You're hilarious. Wow, you tell me. Well, I hope I helped you, Gina.
I hope you have. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Tell Octavia hello and bless her heart, okay? Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right, bye-bye.
That was funny.
Wow, Maureen, that was kind of amazing.
Yeah,
I think that's a situation we can all relate to.
Yeah, but it's weird because I do have a second. I've never met her. It's on my mom's side. It's my mom's cousin's daughter. It would be like third cousin, something like that. I don't know. But she lives really close by. My other family members have met her, just me.
Small world.
Well, I know about.
Before we get back to chatting back and forth a little bit, I just want to throw out the call-in number a few more times just in case anybody missed it. It's 724-444-4851. Call us up. Get your free reading. And again, that number is 724-444-4851. Maureen, why don't you please elaborate some more about this very interesting family you got. Are they all as energetic as you are? Because I swear you've got four times the energy I have.
No, if it makes everybody happy to hear, no, they all agreed when I was growing up, I was crazy. There was something wrong with me. Why do I act like that? What are you doing? You need help. You're bizarre. Fill in the blanks. I didn't have the family that embraced my uniqueness, and that's fine, but it was so it was very difficult. There were six kids, and so, no, this is very, it's a very sensitive, I get into a situation with this friend I was talking about, we're old people now. I mean, I noticed that she's 4 years older. She's 57. And the next thing you know, Nona might be able to relate to this. I suddenly go back into like this childlike phase or feeling that I am being attacked or about who I am because I didn't have a family that embraced me at all. And the thing of it is, I talk fast. And so people go, you're from New York. In fact, that went on that night. I love it. You know, I have Jewish relatives. They're all from the East Coast or Russia. My parents are both from the East Coast, and they're very mellow. No, I grew up in Southern California, really down to earth and very low-key, and I'm a surfer. But, my mind thinks fast. And because, and I also feel I wasn't ever heard very well. You know, when you're around a lot of children in a big family, and some, you know, we all have our dysfunctions, and my father was always gone, and he was an alcoholic, but he was a, you know, corporate executive functioning. The thing is, I was never heard. No one would listen to me. So I think I part of that has a lot to do with why I'm always going, trying to say or get it out, get it out.
Well, there's a lot of wisdom in there, and it has to, like bubbles rising up, it's got to get to the air, you know. There's a lot of wisdom in there.
Well, it's interesting. My sister, you know, I interviewed my sister, and I kind of came full circle with her because, you know, she's the oldest of all of us, and she's USC, you know, grad, whatever, her degrees. But she has a lot of regard for me, and it took a long time to get to that place where we're now. It feels good.
Yeah.
I still have it going on with my family. I mean, my dad didn't do that to me, but, you know, he's dad, so.
Well, parenting is so hard, but to me, and I'm not a parent, so maybe I don't even have a right to weigh in on this, but to me it seems like those who are parents of indigo children or children who are extraordinarily empathic and sensitive and psychic, it seems like these parents are tasked with maybe an extra responsibility for parenting, an extra burden, as it were.
Well, burden? Okay, but nowadays things have changed, Stephen. You know, the thing of it is with the 60s and stuff and with what was going on, the materialism in my family, I came from a, you know, it was clouded. It clouded by, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy where I lived. It was lovely, okay? But I think it was clouded by material world in my family. So it was easy. You know, for instance, I've read about some of the people that work psychic lines or psychics, and you know how they talk about, oh, I'm a fifth or sixth generation psychic. No, I don't know what you feel. I'm not any sixth or seventh generation. Like, and my daughter certainly didn't fall after my footsteps, thank God. But you know what? I drilled my daughter and talked fast, and she had to kind of keep up. Now, I think everybody in this world should listen to me and start keeping up on their brain how fast I talk. But Mariah ended up now, you know, everybody knows what she's doing now, and she's colliding, and where our worlds are colliding. It's fantastic time, the timing. Yeah. But they're also teaching parents how to be good with their children that are sensitive. Sure. Instead, you know, that's what's changed here. And, yeah, you know, I'm not blaming my parents. It was what it was. But what happened was I had my whole family gawking at me, my brothers and sisters. There's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. You know, I wasn't like everybody else. What the heck?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And
but that was my journey. It's okay. It was the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I was going to ask if maybe it had a formative or shaping kind of influence on you.
No, yeah, it did. I was emotionally detached. I was heavily medicating myself at the age of 10. I was trying to exit out of life beginning at the age of 10, exiting out, went on to my 20s. It was difficult. So the thing of it was, though, I know that it was supposed to be like this. This was my journey, where I wouldn't be, right, you know, and it was, but also it was my journey. And you know what? Out of all six kids, I was the only planned child.
Really?
My mom said it because she had to. A particular situation came up. It's not like, yes, only 5 years between my brother and I. And it's the only one that I didn't want to be in this family. I didn't feel like it belonged. But I was, you know, Catholics, you know, they don't, in those days, you know, they just, you know what they do. Yeah. Bam, bam, yeah, bam.
Well, I've got to.
So that's that.
I've seen your nativity, and it's perhaps one of the more psychic birth charts that I've ever seen. Very intensely psychic.
Crazy.
extremely sensitive. No, Marie, let me ask you about your psychic development. What was it like for you growing up being hypersensitive perhaps or psychic? What was your experience cultivating your talents like?
Oh, really good question. I was dragged into all of this spirituality and everything. I grew up in a very practical family. My mother was a union organizer, and I was raised to save the poor people of the world. And I was anti-war, anti-racism. I organized my first demonstration when I was 11, and I used to go door to door to collect money to raise money so that we could stop the Klan from burning black people for barbecue on the weekends. So I grew up with that.
So you got protest. You got the urge to protest from the mother's milk, so to speak.
I did. Well, I grew up with discussions about racism and oppression, and you know, I knew about all of that, and workers being maltreated, and child labor laws weren't in place, and the first exposure to spirituality of any kind of phenomena was I was out in the Wounded Knee occupation in South Dakota, where we were getting shot at, and the press was getting arrested and thrown in jail by our government, which then shut down the press and gave us a warning saying, you surrender or we're going to kill everybody and there will be no press about it. Mm. And all of this has been documented in a book by Peter Matheson after the Freedom of Information Act forced the release of all the files from that occupation that happened in South Dakota. And I met a medicine man who was out there named Leonard Crowdog and his dad, Henry Crowdog, and then an author, a Vietnamese guy that was made into an honorary Lakota Sioux person. And I hung out with these guys from because I got involved with them politically for civil rights and monitoring for fair elections and stuff. And I saw strange things happen. Very strange things. And, you know, psychic phenomena that I couldn't deny. But I still thought, well, that's for American Indians. You know, I'm a New Yorker. Doesn't happen to me. And from that point on, just strange and weird things started to happen. And when I finally met a teacher, I was in my 30s, I think, and he pretty much forced me to do readings. He would just constantly force me into situations and ask me to do readings. And then, and I still didn't believe that I was, you know, I did that. And then how it really started is I was at a spiritual retreat and I wanted to stay another week and I didn't have any money to do that. And my job said I could stay, but I didn't have any money to pay for another week. And a friend of mine told everybody there that I did incredible readings and I charged $50 and they should all come see me. And they did. And I was sure that I was just making stuff up. I was sure that, you know, lightning was going to come and strike me dead for doing something like this. And I took copious notes on all these readings. And, you know, I cried. I thought, oh, you know, this is so greedy and selfish. And actually, everything was accurate and everything was right and everything kept working. And that was like in 86. And that was really the beginning of when I finally said, okay, I guess I can do this. And then, in hindsight, it explained a lot of strange things that I could never explain when I was a kid. And I also realized that my mother was incredibly psychic, but she didn't know that either. She was a therapist. And when I was a teenager, I would say something like, well, Johnny's coming over. And she would go off about Johnny. And I would get so mad because I was a teenager. How can you be so prejudiced against Johnny and how can you be so judgmental? But she knew everything about him just from hearing his first name. And so she was doing a reading. I had no idea. And it didn't hit me until I started doing readings that that's what she was doing. And she was always accurate. She was spot on. It was incredible. So I was sort of like, you know, I don't know. I just stumbled into this stuff and got kind of driven towards it relentlessly. And in hindsight, it explained a lot of things that plagued me when I was growing up and why I was always hanging out with animals and why I felt I could talk to animals and why, I don't know, just certain things I'd say to people that they would always get mad, like I was saying something personal. And it was because I was doing readings and didn't know it. So I wish I had grown up in one of the families where they knew about, you know, gifted children and all that stuff. It would have been quite a different experience.
So. Yeah. I can envision a future America where there's sort of like an X-Men type of situation, you know, a professor who mentors and shapes and guides all the budding talents of the psychic, I guess the psychic Olympians in America. I can certainly envision that. I can certainly even envision, you know, psychic kindergartens and things as Americans in the world come to embrace their own latent and not so latent, perhaps, psychic abilities.
There was a fabulous school opened up by the Shirley MacLaine wrote about an acupuncturist in New Mexico who used acupuncture to regress her through past lives. And this woman had a bunch of children, and she opened up a school, which she shut down after her last kid graduated. And kids came, I went and visited the school. Kids came from all over the world, and they all had astrology charts done, and they all had past life regressions done. And then based on that, they created a curriculum for themselves of study based on all of that spiritual information. It was absolutely phenomenal. Unfortunately, it was a rare occurrence. You know, that school is not the norm, but in some countries, India, Burma, when a child is born, parents run a life chart on the child first to see why the soul has come in, and then the parents name the child based on their understanding of that soul's chart for that lifetime. They give them a name that will help strengthen them on their journey. So in That's some awesome. Cultures, yeah, it's very normal, but the United States, we're still mostly Judeo-Christian tradition.
Well,
so
we'll catch up. We'll catch up for sure. Well, you know what? I actually have a caller from Florida. Hello, Florida. How are you? Florida?
Hello.
Hello. Good evening. How may I help you tonight?
Okay. I had a quick question about a guy.
Okay.
Basically, we dated for about 2 years, broke up back in January, went on and off, went through modes of just sort of pushing him away, throwing him off the bridge a little, and right now, the last time I saw him was about two and a half weeks ago. Things are fine, and I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago, and that door is open, like, we're civil, we talk, blah, blah, blah. But as civil and as sweet and everything is going, I was just, basically my question is if you guys see it working out or us reconnecting in the future, and, yeah.
Okay, I understand exactly what you're asking, and I tell you what, let's just sort of evaluate both possibilities. You know, calling the right psychic will give you the power to sort of evaluate both paths so that you don't have to take the wrong one. Okay, so let's see what would happen if you left the door open, if you continued your life with this person. And what would happen, we're going to compare that. What's going to happen if you cut everything loose and say, I'm tired of this sort of clenching and relaxing dynamic. I'm tired of getting back together, breaking up, getting back together, etc. You know, these are two options. Let's see. And I'll tell you what. Judging Frey, it looks so. Yeah, definitely. And you might not like to hear this, but I'm telling you, the better option is to leave and to cut yourself off in this situation. Because I'm going to promise you something right now. If you get with this guy, if you let him come back, you're going to be really, really happy for about maybe 12 weeks, maybe. Things are going to be great. And furthermore, you'd move in with the guy, but I guarantee you would move out. I promise you that. It will end up, the result, the sum of all of these getting back togethers and breaking ups, the sum of it is going to wind up in a permanent breakup. Now, meanwhile, if you say to him, you know, look, I thank you for the years you've given me. I don't have any ill will, et cetera, whatever you have to say. But if you say, look, we can't, you know, this is enough. If you do that, I guarantee you that, first of all, you will you'll heal from what seems to me to be 2 years worth of a delayed breakup. That's a scar that's forming inside of you right now. And, you know, your mother will tell you, your grandmother will tell you, your medical textbook will tell you, once you have a scar or a scab starting to form over a wound, if you keep picking it off, it's going to leave a very ugly scar. So I can promise you this, that my spirit guides and whatever abilities I have available to me, meager as they are, indicate that now's the time to let the healing process complete. And if you do that, what I see is that you will have wisdom to allow your next partner to love you properly, the way that you want to. But you'll realize the skills and the techniques that you would need to be successful. And I hate to put it that way, because, you know, to equate love and relationship with, you know, techniques and skills. But, you know, I don't deal in Hollywood every day. My life is not a Nicholas Sparks movie. My life is a never-ending stream of relationship difficulties. And so I can promise you that after you heal, then you'll have the analytic capability to select a partner who will not put you through these emotional calisthenics, and B, you'll have enough emotional wisdom to understand how to manage that guy so that he's capable of loving you, so that you don't, for example, run him off with, you know, with whatever, you know, whatever is wrong. So definitely it's time to turn the page and start a new chapter, okay? That's what I see here clearly.
If Stephen's dropped off the call, we're going to go into closing. Stephen, I'm going to ask, are you there, Stephen? Well, I hear something coming on. Okay, well, Stephen may, Stephen's kind of in limbo land just because he's in an interesting part. Okay, well, I would like to thank everybody for joining us this evening. Thank you to Doug behind the scenes who keeps us on track. And next week, my show, as a matter of fact, is on the power of sound healing with Alea Dow is my guest. And this will be a very interesting show. It's about, interestingly enough, Stephen brought up, not only is she a healer, practitioner, and so on, but she's also she was in numerous shows on the Shirley MacLaine show, which you guys were talking about her earlier. Mm-hmm. And she has, she does angelic healing, sound medicine, and stillness and meditations. So I hope to see you all there next week. And thank you for everybody joining us, and we'll see you again. Good night.
Good night.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.
Yeah, I know.